UK Wine Show, show number 9. Hi, and welcome to the UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and this show is about wine and the UK wine scene. This week, we're going to be looking at the second in our three-part series at restaurants. Last week, we spoke to James Ellis, owner and director of Ellis of Richmond. Today, we're talking to Matthew Cooper. He's the wine buyer at Ellis, and he's going to be talking a bit about his job as a wine buyer, which is generally considered in the wine trade as one of those dream jobs. He's also going to be looking at the differences in the types of wines you might expect from, say, the supermarket and the wines you might get at a restaurant. This week's show is brought to you by 3050. 3050 are a wine tasting company. They run private and corporate events in the UK. So if you're interested in a wine tasting, go and see them at 3050.co.uk. That's spelt T-H-I-R-T-Y-F-I-F-T-Y. And if you want to get in hold of me, my name is Chris Scott. My email address is chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. That's all one word. But before we have the interview with Matthew, let's have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Chateau Petrus has broken the record price for not-yet-bottled Bordeaux as buyers are coughing up £20,000 to get hold of cases of the 2005 vintage. The wine from this chateau consistently ranks as one of the world's most expensive, but never before has it sold for such a hefty price tag en primeur. As there's no guarantee that the wine will be worth more when it's bottled in 2 years' time, those buying as an investment will be hoping that Robert Parker gives it an even higher rating than his current 96 out of 100 when he retastes it then. Although those who buy Chateau Petrus now won't take delivery until 2008, if they could have their sip of wine today, it would be a mere £50 a mouthful. English Sparkling Wine scooped a sensational 10 awards at the International Wine and Spirit Competition, including the trophy for the best bottle fermented sparkling wine in the world for the third time in 8 years. Night Imber's Classic Cuvée 1998 was crowned top sparkler, while a coveted gold medal was given to Denbigh's Greenfields 2003. England also picked up 5 of the 7 silver medals in the same category. Night Imber's winemaker Dermot Sugru told us, "It's sensational to have won this trophy for the third time. It's a fantastic achievement and a feather in the cap for English sparkling wine. And not only did England triumph as the most successful country in the bottle fermented sparkling wine category, but our own Oz Clark was also named Communicator of the Year." And lastly, as the UK weather makes tabloid headlines, it's also great news for our grape growing. We spoke to Chris White, General Manager at Denbigh's, who reckons we'll have both quantity and quality this year, and the sugar content in the grapes will be as good as 2003. And Dermot Sugru at Night Imber agrees. He told us, "The weather over the last month has been wonderful for the grapes. In fact, the vineyard has been textbook perfect this year. It's been very warm, with very little rain, and at flowering in late June, the weather was excellent. So let's hope predictions for an Indian summer come true to produce a fantastic 2006 vintage for English wine."
Thanks, Jane. That's the second year in a row now Naipa Timber's come out with the top sparkling wine. The other wine that I quite like is Astrolabe. It won the trophy for the top Sauvignon Blanc at the International Wine and Spirit Competition. Next up, we've got Matthew Cooper, wine buyer at Ellis. Let's have a listen to what he had to say. I'm with Matthew Cooper. He's the wine buyer from Ellis of Richmond. Ellis is one of the leading wine suppliers to the southeast and London wine trade. How are you, Matthew?
Very well, thank you.
How did you get into wine?
I got into wine really by default. As a student, I was an engineering student, and I found that drinking on a Wednesday afternoon was probably contributing more to my education than the engineering aspect. And I participated in a lot of inter-university wine tasting competitions. I found that really quite stimulating.
You left university after a civil degree, and what were you looking at doing then?
Having spent 3 years working for my engineering degree, I was rather disillusioned to find that the best job offer I was able to receive was as a tarmac surface engineer working out of an office in Luton on the extremely well-paid salary of about £6,000. This is, bearing in mind, this is 20 years ago, but it wasn't particularly attractive at the time.
Right.
So I got back in touch with the head of the university wine tasting committee, who was the cricket commentator, John Arlott, and he put me in touch very kindly with a couple of wine companies, one of whom were brave enough to employ me.
So you became a wine buyer. I mean, when I did my wine qualifications, being a wine buyer was considered the dream job. That was what everybody wanted to do. Is it a good job?
It was certainly my dream occupation. I thoroughly enjoyed my time as a wine buyer, but it has evolved to be quite a different job to that I had originally envisaged. It's far more demanding and time-consuming than I think many people appreciate. And although it has many benefits, very enjoyable times, it is actually quite a discipline that requires a lot of hard work and effort.
Is it as much travel as they say?
The travel aspect is becoming less and less important. I think we're rather privileged now that communications and the opportunity to send wines by courier present a very different opportunity to make comparative tastings. And I spend much of my time within the tasting room of my office, sending out emails and sending out faxes to accumulate samples. When I'm looking for something, I can accumulate 30, 40 samples of a certain type of wine and make a comparative judgment. This is something I could never do travelling and visiting wineries one after the other on a vineyard visit. So much of the travelling I do now is focused on making blends or reviewing the wine styles are available to the UK market, making something tailor-made to be successful for Ellis of Richmond and particularly the demands of the consumer in London.
Does that mean that some of the wines that you're going to, you might be going to a winery in Chile and getting them to make a particular blend of wine for the UK market? The same wine sold in the UK could be different to, say, the wine sold in the US, even though it's got the same label.
Very much. I think the Chilean market is an excellent example because the flexibility to a very important export market has made them aware of the subtle differences that make successful. And for instance, the American market will take a sweeter, less aromatic Sauvignon Blanc from Chile. And there may be 20, 30 vats of different styles of Sauvignon Blanc that I would get access to, one or two of which are far more aromatic, have maybe more lemony, zingy characteristic, better acidity, and I know they'll work very well for the London market. So the same wine, essentially, is taken from different vats and sent to different markets. I give you an example. The one region of France which has been extremely successfully marketed is the region of Champagne. And I think you'll find that the quality of Champagne made for each different market has always varied. They know that the certain markets in Europe require either more sugar, less acidity, and the subtle variations that have made them successful. So it's nothing new, but it's being reflected in the quality of table wines, increasingly so. And it's not just Chile, but it's a lot of time spent with producers in South Africa, Australia, and increasingly now in France, French regional areas, where we can get the quality that we want that suits not just the UK, but specifically the London market and the London restaurant market.
Yeah, you mentioned France and a hammering from the Aussies in the last few years. Do you think this change will help them? You said they never really changed the blend of the wine for different markets. Is that something you've noticed is coming more and more to the front now with France?
I think the commercial demands for export with many of the French regions are such that they have to take more notice of the international market. And we're seeing a resurgence of French wines, regional French wines, where maybe a younger generation is now responsible for the winemaking. And they may well have been educated in vineyard areas outside France. They probably have more awareness of the international market, and as their own declining consumption means that they must be successful internationally, they've adapted their winemaking styles. But I'm talking about really the producers that are able to make two or three different cuvées from the volume that they make that are all specific to certain markets.
As a wine buyer and specialising in smaller producers rather than the big branded wines, compared that to, say, something like the supermarkets, what's your opinion on the supermarkets versus the restaurant market and the sort of wines that are really geared for those two markets?
I think the supermarkets have both good and negative points. I think everyone who's involved in the wine trade in the UK will be grateful for the growth in wine consumption that the supermarkets have encouraged. I think at the same time, we're rather pleased that as an independent small importer of boutique wines for the on-trade, we're offering an alternative, increasingly more of an alternative, to the styles and origins of wines that the supermarket can offer. And unfortunately, the mere success of supermarkets has diminished the choice. Certainly in the retail market, supermarkets have become so successful that the competition has disappeared, and even within their own shelves, there seems to be less real choice for the consumer. So hopefully, the opportunity that we have is to offer consumers more choice through the restaurant market.
So it's the restaurants, you're saying you're getting different wines coming into the restaurants than you'd see in the supermarkets. Is a consumer looking for something a wee bit different in the restaurant trade?
I think a consumer looks for something a little bit special when they're going out to a restaurant. After all, you don't go out to eat what you can cook at home. What you drink on a regular basis from the supermarket or your local retailer, you might want to have an alternative is a little bit more interesting in a restaurant. And I think the one opportunity that a restaurant has is to show and to educate customers to try something a little bit different, hopefully something that they will enjoy and they'll have confidence to come back and try something else a little different.
Do you think the wines themselves are different to maybe some of the easy glugging wine that you might buy in the supermarket? Yeah, they might have high in acidity or lots of tannins.
I think that there's a lot of truth in that. The successful wines that have grown in the supermarket shelves, specifically Australian style of wines and some of the big branded wines from California perhaps, are not particularly successful in the on-trade, and I think partly that is because their style of wine that is immediately flattering and very drinkable, but they're not particularly good as a companion to many food types. And we're looking for characteristics that offer a better match. We're looking for wines that have a greater depth of flavour, probably more acidity or more tannins, that can match out food and offer a more interesting and complex experience.
Just a complete change of tack now. As a buyer, you've probably run a lot of different tastings. What's the most interesting tasting you've run?
Well, I do a lot of tastings for customers, restaurants and for sales team, and I've never had an audience who have paid attention to every single word I've said, other than on one occasion, and that was at Spearmint Rhino, the Gentleman's Club. The great opportunity for me was to show a range of champagnes from non-vintage Grand Marc to vintage and luxury cuvée, and quite unexpectedly, most of the girls who worked there took extensive notes and paid an awful lot of attention to every one of my words, so I felt rather flattered, and it was very rewarding as a tasting. And I'm sure it's reflected in their sales and commissions. However, I don't get many perks like that.
Spearmint Rhinos, they're the lap dancing bar, aren't they?
The Gentleman's Club, as they like to be known.
Okay. And what was in it for the girls? Why were they so interested?
I think the girls were more interested in the opportunity to get their customers to sell up. There's an awful lot of commission involved when you're selling Louis Roederer or Cristal, and unfortunately, I wasn't invited back later on in the day.
Just last thing, we always get people to give us a wine tip, something that might help people consume. From your perspective, what would you recommend to people?
I've done an awful lot of tasting over the last year, and I think one or two regions stand out as probably being worth, in general, revisiting. And I've been very impressed with the un-oaked Chardonnays from Burgundy, specifically Chablis and from the Mâconnais, i.e. the north and the south of Burgundy. And I think they offer probably collectively a quality that we haven't enjoyed for many years. Some good vintages, 2004 and 2005. And if you're looking for an alternative to Chardonnay, I know a lot of people don't drink Chardonnay anymore, but I think your faith will be restored if you take a look at some of the more exceptional Chablis and Mâcon offerings at the moment. And that's certainly what I'm drinking a lot of at home at the moment.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Matthew, and cheers.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Well, thanks for listening to this week's show. Next week, we conclude the three-part series looking at restaurants. We have the newly opened restaurant Marcus Tavern. We're going to find out a bit about how they chose their wines for their wine list, and also what sort of wines people are buying with their meals, or whether they're just buying them to drink. Until then, cheers and good drinking.